So anyway, that's enough stories, I guess.
Yeah.
What about this this radiant presence?
Yeah, what about it?
What's going on with that?
It's hard to know.
So, were you at the Monday meeting?
Yes.
Under Beth, the name Beth.
I'm not sure. I may not have been. Oh, she was logged in, and I was watching over her shoulder.
That's. I figured that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting to me how much I still believe, how much I don't. I don't know how to even phrase this.
Right.
How much I don't know or do know, or think I know.
Yeah.
When I talked to Peter about no thought is real, and we were talking about the computer, he was giving that as an example. Like, you know, I'm saying, well, the seemingly thought of computer still refers to that's in front of me that is seemingly a computer, and he was saying no.
No, right, yeah, right.
And that really, it was a little of a aha moment when he kept on talking about it and was like, oh, my thought about a computer only refers to my other thoughts of a computer.
Yeah, that's right. It's only looping self-reference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was really fascinating to me.
Wow.
And I even keep on, unfortunately, not enough so that I don't have to actually go through it in my head and go, wait a minute, I still think thoughts are right. Wait a minute. And then I have to go through that little thing and go, oh, yeah. You know, so it's still like a chore, you know?
Yes.
Isn't there a difference? I mean, there's been times when I walked into my kitchen and all of a sudden I went, holy fuck.
Yeah.
Like, I could just look, like Peter would say, he just looks.
Yes.
Look, and then it was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Now everything we've ever talked about is telling me, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's like that, and then there's the, well, yeah, I kind of get it. And then you think about it. So it's kind of like one way is through experience, and one way is kind of still through logic. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. I mean, what we call experiencing is, you know, we'll do our hats off to Sailor Bob, is non-dual. Right, experiencing itself is non-dual. For instance, walking into a kitchen and all you've got is, holy fuck. So there's no, you know, there's no intermediary that's creating a tapestry of looking at present experience through prior experience.
Right.
It's just, you know, on, let's say this is total surprise.
For someone like Peter or yourself, I don't know, that's always the case? There's no intermediate ever anymore at that point.
Well, even the hint of finality that the question looks at, it dissolves in surprise. Like, you know, you could answer it by saying, once this thing got as, you know, deep as it got and did whatever it did, there's been no straying from that since. And that's, you know, some people are, let's say, capable, able, and deserve to make that claim about their so-called experience. But even that creates a subtle reference point.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, so if all there is, you know, surprise, then even that idea of framing one's experience through, let's say, awakening is all there is and there's no straying from it, turns out to be, what can we say, a little misleading?
Well, even Peter has talked about the time he was sitting in the chair and he just put together the three.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember what they were, but it was like this, this, and this. Oh, okay.
Right.
That seemed to be like a – and then he has talked about, you know, the fact that it never, ever stops process, if you want to call it that, never ever stops, but there is a birth. There is a difference. Just like when you're born, you were never born and you were never died, but there is a, that birth from your mother when you go, whoa, it's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he's talking about that.
Yeah, I mean, you could, you know, refer to that as the, what would you say? The, you know, the maturing or the revelation of the impersonal. So that you could say that sense of the intermediary that turns to thought and association to structure the world is gone, not gone, present, believed, not believed. I mean, you can still, you know, it can conjure instantaneously, let's say for practical purposes or for getting, you know, from one location to another. But the overriding, let's call it, you know, the vibratory tickle, the impersonal vibratory tickle, becomes what, more prominent. So then there's no reflexive reach back into conceiving mind to, you know, frame one's experience. And interestingly, that's always the case.
Right. It's just that what's showing up at the moment may include an illusion of there being an actual past.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That illusion at the time when I remember it the most, that it wasn't, there wasn't a feeling with it. Like I, you know, there's a feeling with past and future. It seemed like at that point there wasn't a feeling of past and future. It was just like it was a fucking hologram.
Yeah.
I mean, it's happened to me, you know, I mean, it's weird because, you know, when we try to say when it happened and it's happened, it's all.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the times that it has happened, like 100%, it's just been like, this is a fucking hologram.
Holy yeah, shit. Yeah. Sure.
It's a hologram. There's nothing in it at all. It's very empty.
That's funny. That's great.
I'm just a fucking hologram. Holy shit.
Yeah. Well, Peter's, you know, yoga is, you know, drafted to peer into the nature of present experience. Excuse me. And, well, I mean, discover how vague and apparitional the movement of association and the structure of space-time and, right, individuation and continuity are truly holographically displayed from nothing at all. And so you can, you know, if one is a gifted objectivist, then, yeah, you can use the miraculous skills of sensual reflection and contemplation, let's say, to watch the apparition arise at present. And that's, you know, that's certainly fun. I mean, it's a worthwhile endeavor for any card-carrying seeker to dismantle the, you know, the belief systems, the superstitions, the imposition of mind, and tune into the intimacy of present apparition.
So,
well,
One thing that's always been a little confusing, and I think I've talked to you about this before, is when I read your letters, your letters, I don't know what to call them, your writings, it's always been like, a lot of times the first part would be just how nothing is, you know, what we usually talk about, you know, about, you know, enlightenment and no such thing. And,
yeah,
you know, and then you, a lot of times after that, you'll talk about, like you'll talk, all right, so it seems like you talk about, yeah, there's no story about even enlightenment. And then you seem to have a section where you talk about the world and government and whatever, and that seems like, well, that's just the story anyway. So I always got confused about that. I don't know if you can talk about that a little.
Yeah, it's just, it's, you know, it's the way I like to entertain myself. You know, really simply put. I mean, there's no enlightenment, there's enlightenment. There's no world, there's a world.
Yeah.
I mean, anything that pours, you know, forth out of your imagination is, you know, fodder for, you know, being disturbed or being entertained. Then why not play around with juggling the implications of an apparent world with the you know, curious quality of presence that world, whatever suggests what awakening is or what intimacy is.
I think the reason that it always gets my attention is probably because I'm always playing with that juggling myself.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, holy fuck, there's nothing, you know, no word means anything. If no word means anything, then there is nothing. Because there's nothing to refer to, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then, shit, I gotta make phone calls and pay the bills. Oh, well, there's no world anyway. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah,
see?
Well, still gotta pay the bills. It's
see?
Just, yeah,
it's not, I mean, you know, it's not avoidable. It's not escapable. I mean, maybe if you're, you know, Ramana Maharshi sitting in a cave getting eaten by insects, you're oblivious to the so-called world. And so you don't have anything to say about it. That's cool. I, you know, it's like, let's say the species goes out of business. And then, right, where's our enlightenment then? You see how an interest in enlightenment or an interest in holography or the wow or the constancy of, you know, nirvana is valuable within the, let's say, plenum of there being a world.
Yeah, but is, I mean, doesn't there always have to be a world? I mean, no, you call it a world because you can't call it a world because a world means.
Yeah, I know. It's weird.
I don't know. I've asked this, I think, to Peter, and, you know, Peter's, this doesn't go away. It's always, it just may look different. So does that mean this may look different than a world? But it's, in other words, what you really are isn't what's appearing in it as a world anyway. Well, what's all that stuff about?
I know. And I mean, all those are, you know, certainly poignant questions, but they're, in a sense, they're all without context, just like the world is without context, just like enlightenment, the presence of it or the pursuit of it is really without context. You know, for someone to place value on, let's call it non-dual speak and reject, you know, discussion of the world, right?
Yeah.
Seems to me to be a little, well, it's, you know, it's a little boring. It's a little myopic. Because you know that everyone's coming to participate in enlightenment speak has a real interest in feeling a certain way in the world.
Well, everyone just wants to get out of feeling like shit.
Okay, so that's one of the motivators, right? We want to ameliorate afflictive experience. And so one way that we imagine we can ameliorate afflictive experience is to understand or be gifted with self-realization. And now we have another set of, you know, curious qualities. You see, but no matter what consciousness is looking at, whether it's the presence of the world or the absence of a world or, you know, highbrow discussion of Brahman or, you know, lamentation over the condition of things, it's like, it's all in. It's always all in. So I, you know, having been a, you know, card-carrying seeker for some time, and going through the codependency and, you know, all the seeker's dilemmas that I've been through, you can see how an aspiring student of yoga is always going to be beleaguered by, right, preferences and experience and the quality of experience and the nature of dharma, the nature of karma, whether I'm making any progress, what should I do differently, having the rug pulled out from under me, you know, wanting to recreate myself because I'm intimidated by things. I don't like to hear about certain kinds of things because those seem anathema to what I'm really interested in. And this, you know, goes on and on and on and on. So I like to be a little, what would you call it, you know, mirthful or a little disturbing just for fun rather than, you know, play some kind of party line. It's like, what kind of claim can you actually make? When that hologram, you know, wipes you away, what claim can you make?
What do you mean, what claim can you make? When it comes to the world?
Well, a claim about anything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, that's what gets me confused, because if I read, I mean, you have a section differently on this letter. But you, a lot of times, your first part is, you know, hologram, and then the second part is, oh, but this is what's going on, and this is crazy. You know, sometimes I see that, and I go, wait a minute.
Yeah, I get it.
Once that hologram is present, the rest of it is just, I guess, it's just a dance, like any other dance. You know.
Sure. I mean, you know, Shiva didn't stop dancing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the dance goes on with every single aspect of every move you make, pretty much. Whether it's fighting with your wife or doing business and making money, and
yeah,
exactly what all that shit is and how it's happening, of course, is the part that
right
fucking knows, you know.
I mean, you know, let's just say, seekers, you know, come together out of a certain kind of, you know, affection or interest or vitality, to consider, you know, the subtlety and nuance of contemplative experience, contemplative discovery, enlightenment, if we want to call it that. And, you know, we show up as a body, as a person. At venues, like for instance this one.
Right.
And so for me, it's just feels right to be able to create a mosh pit of, you know, what, political, socio-political commentary, climatology commentary, you know, you know, ameliorate my own fear of the President-elect's destruction of the universe. And so, you know, using my writing as a way to play around with the mutation of attention.
It's funny you say that, because the night of the election, I was already in a high anxiety state.
Yeah. Which
I realize has nothing to do with anything anymore.
Right.
You know, but when I, you know, and I wasn't watching the election, but when I would go upstairs once in a while and I'd hear that my wife was watching it, and I'd hear it, and I started to realize, holy shit.
Holy shit. Right.
You know, and then the fear, you know, seemed to get more intense.
And yep.
I, as far as news goes, I'm totally, I watch, I get my news from the Daily Show. That's pretty sad, pretty yeah. sad from a yeah. comedy show.
Me too.
And, I, after he won, I stopped watching it. I wouldn't watch. I have not watched him on television once because I can't do it. Not only because the fear is now gone, but it's just obnoxious. It's not just that he's what he is. It's because he's just so fucking obnoxious to me.
Yeah.
So I can't even tolerate. I can barely tolerate one skit on Saturday Night Live about it.
Right.
Not even funny anymore.
Yeah.
But after a little while, I think I was used, after a while, I used this to get rid of that fear by going, holy fuck, you know, like, I don't even know, like, I think even Peter said the other day, you don't even know what a Donald Trump is. It's like the computer. It's like you have a thought about the thought and then a whole bunch of thoughts that go with it, and it doesn't even refer to anything, you know, so I use that. I want to get out of this fear, you know.
Sounds like the bat phone.
Okay, and so, and then after a while, it just stopped on its own. You know, I didn't have to work at it, and it's like, it's just really looking into. I don't have any clue what any of that stuff is about, and neither does anybody else. It's just, you know. Anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just, I guess, like you said, it keeps on going on anyway, the whole world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to take this. I'll be right back. It's the wife.
Oh, well then, pick it up. I'm just going to reach into your room and steal one of your guitars. It's hard to pull them through the screen. So, what were you fighting about?
Just sort of in a weird, lots of anger coming up to that. I decided to put it on her.
It's good to have a sister.
Usually I don't do that, but I don't have any control over myself.
No, you're not alone. Yeah. Scary.
Yeah. Usually she's my ally, but
yeah.
You never know where the wind's going to blow.
Sometimes it strengthens the bonds.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Consciousness is, you know, it's very playful, very resourceful. It dreams with a frenzy.
Sorry.
Yeah. And will sometimes call many times in a row.
Decongestants are great, by the way. I mean,
aren't they?
If you have to function.
Yeah.
Plus, I have ADHD, so they totally help me focus.
Oh, there you go. Which do you prefer?
In terms of, oh, you mean what kind? Or
mm-hmm.
Just like the stuff you have to buy from behind the counter now.
Oh, right. The yeah. stuff that you can make meth out of if you're not careful.
Yeah. Coffee and sufedrin or something. I don't know.
Yeah, really. If it's locked away, that's the one I want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I noticed that Pino Troll guy has this whole, there's like a big website about his lineage on the internet.
About his lineage?
Yeah, like,
you mean you mean his pedigree as a count?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a little weird, isn't it?
Sure. Well, we wouldn't know. I mean, we're so blue collar and, you know, mutt based.
So mutt based.
We're so mutt based. So there's a guy that actually had a, you know, a pedigree bloodline.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of good that does him now.
Yeah. Dead.
Dead.
Diddly bop bop dead. Diddly bop. He's enjoying the greater, you know, consciousness from on high.
Maybe once you, you know, you erase yourself, you can go back and have a dynasty preceding you.
Yeah, why not?
I'm going to just stick with miscellaneous dead. Like on the gravestone, you just write like miscellaneous. You don't even just abbreviate it.
Miss.
Just plain dead.
Just dead.
Dead.
Yeah. That's nice. Your lies dead.
Yeah. Dead number one, dead number two.
Yeah.
Whoever's buried under this stone is dead.
People, I didn't realize, I don't know, there's so many, we're walking this graveyard up here and there's just so much adornment and little night lights and they've got,
wow.
I mean,
wow.
Yeah, if you want a Christmas wreath, you just go up there, take one.
Jeez.
Oh yeah, just grab whatever you need from the cemetery.
Best thing about cemeteries is, no gas stations or CVSs or...
Seems we're better off with lower expectations.
Mm. Yeah, I heard there was some sort of disorder called a thymic disorder where some people are born just not caring about anything. They
wow.
don't feel pain and they don't.
Wow.
You know, they don't have an invested interest in anything. So.
Sounds like a nice disorder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to
afford or something for
stimulation that'll do that to you, recreate the same brain chemistry.
Mm.
Well, mad scientists, I guess.
Yeah.
What were you saying, Francine? Sorry, I was talking over you.
I don't know. I think it was just banter.
Banter.
Maybe, you know, the ordinary tonality of experience is, you know, unsatisfactory. That's kind of an interesting, you know, observation. Without, you know, drama and circumstances and woe is me's and a bunch of reasons to go see Byron Katie. Just, wow, here's the easeful or perhaps not so easeful presence of experience, the light of experience. This is it. And do we find, camaraderie in it, you know, intimacy in it? You know, you could say emotions like, you know, trust or wonder or appreciation, gratitude, if you want to go in that direction. Or are we just kind of insatiably, you know, distracted? It's like this unrecognized sense of, you know, insufficiency. And then one's, you know, personality and the dramas of the day and the dramas of the life flitter about within that, you know, overall or overarching environment of, yeah, I'm just, yeah, this isn't quite right. Experience is not quite right and my life's not quite right and my spiritual progress is not quite right and I still envy people that are enlightened, whether legitimately so or not. There might be something to that, you know, kind of hanging out with the, you could say the undistracted disappointment of it all. Because I would say that's at the, you know, it's kind of a root. I would say it's a more honest or intimate place or thing to feel than all of the drama that, you know, distracts us from it. Mm. Like you don't have to do a bunch of JYNs and go through all of the, entertaining frivolity of one's lifelong codependency. Just hang the fuck out and how basically disappointing this is. I mean, even our, you know, interest in pursuit of nirvana or kensho or, you know, non-dual understanding is, again, it's a kind of an anticipatory remedy for a very simple, you could say, unadorned encounter, which is its present experience sufficient? Is it pleasing? Or is it just not right? You know, not enough. Now, who knows what might happen to someone's experience just to hang out with the not enoughness and the, you know, the insufficiency of present experience.
Can you say that again? Who knows?
Without going into the dramas that we're all capable of creating.
Yeah.
that can elaborate, you know, just how unsatisfactory our lives can look. I would say there's something poignant that's underneath all that, which is here's experience. This is the, you know, call it simple, complex, radiant, whatever, presentation of the fact of sentience. Here it is. This is it. There's no, you know, there's nothing other than this. And yet, our kind of reflexive relationship with it is that it's just, it's not right. It's not enough. It's not complete. I need more. More understanding, more sensuality, deeper spiritual experience, more security. Right?
More money.
Okay. That's right. More money.
Whatever it is, right?
Yeah. And we don't really spend all that much time in an undefended relationship with whether present experience is satisfactory or not. In a sense, we kind of have habituated to the presumption that it is unsatisfactory. We don't know why. We don't even know what unsatisfactory means. But we're kind of like, this is unsatisfactory. It's just always unsatisfactory. I don't care what you say about it. I'm never right. This is never right. And then we shoot off into, you know.
There's always hope.
There's always hope. And, yeah, we shoot off into a drama field. So, like, the idea, you know, of enlightenment is the ultimate psychiatric good times role ameliorative for the unsatisfactoriness of ordinary experience becomes, it becomes a distortion. Maybe it's okay for this to be unsatisfactory, insufficient, you know, a little troubling actually.
Yeah, I think the goal is to be okay with that unsatisfactory. I mean, that's the ultimate liberation.
Maybe, but even the notion of being okay, it's like what if this was just forever, as long as I live, let's say, unsatisfactory. Now, how would I relate to, oh my God, this is, I mean, I'm getting along. I don't have anything to complain about, you know, really. But
as far as like creature goes, there's no security or safety. You're never going to find it. And however you frame it, if it's like money is just you're looking for security and safety.
Yeah. Yeah.
Enlightenment, I don't know, some yes. other kind of bizarre form of security and safety.
Yes.
Or power, whatever it is. It's all kind of intertwined. It's some weird.
That's right.
Idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
That doesn't have anything to do with anything. It just holds you hostage. It's some weird, you know, it's like.
That's what I'm aiming for. What is it that's holding me hostage? What's the nature? What's the texture of either a conscious or a semi or unconscious relationship with experience that's holding me hostage?
Are you saying that for us to question, or is that the question that you
you can borrow from it if you like? Because we jump into solutions and remedies, you know, distractions, so easily, so reflexively. And I would say that, I would say it deadens or compromises our fundamental intelligence, because we've become a solution driven. To wiggle away from whatever the fact of present experience is. If we don't, you know, spend, let's say, some quality time with the unadorned root of the unsatisfactoriness that we may have or be suffering from present experience, then we'll just distract ourselves forever. So if nothing were added to you or subtracted from you, how's this right about now? Because we're looking for, you know, ferreting out a present catharsis, not a future catharsis, present catharsis. And that present catharsis, the door into that present catharsis is, you know, the absolute ordinariness of present experience. And all of that, you know, subterranean, barely perceptible impulse conversation that's, you know, going on, you could say, behind the scenes, that convinces me that this is unsatisfactory, that it's insufficient, that it's not what I had in mind when I took birth, and I have to distract myself, entertain myself, get more of whatever I think I need, less of what I don't, and if I become a seeker fucker, well, then I don't rest until I'm in possession of self-realization.
It seems like there's a point where you just realize ain't gonna happen. Like nothing's gonna change. And that's kind of like, I'm fine. That's fine. Now I don't have to try anymore.
That could be a train that you take for a time. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Or even, you know, the candid observation that, yeah, I really would like to be enlightened for as long as I can remember I wanted to be enlightened, and oh boy, that's not going to happen. That may be, you know, a train you can take for a while, but it may not be true either. It may be another subtle, you know, distraction from the ongoing ordinariness of present experience. Yeah, because you see, what the mind loves to do, which is really all it can do, is it does a half gainer into time. Time is conjured as a response to whether present experience is satisfactory or not. And I mean at a subtle, kind of a subtle place, you know, not a drama field. And I'm not putting down anyone's drama fields. We're all more than welcome to them and a million more to come. Big deal. There's a certain kind of preciousness that accompanies or is the nature of present experience without attempting to adorn it or turn it into anything. you know, maybe it's the affection of the Bodhisattva for all sentient creatures. I think we've become so accustomed to the reflex that present experience is somehow unsatisfactory or insufficient that we just habitually go into, you know, one rampage after another. It's kind of like consciousness itself can only do one thing, and that is like an avoidance strategy. What does consciousness do best? Well, it avoids itself. And that's how we function. We're avoidant.
It's so weird that it does that, though. Yeah. I mean, I was having that kind of experience or thought of, like, yeah, how it does that with others and creates all this weird. It's just too strange.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, any one of us can find a million reasons to be disappointed, you know, without delay. We know that so well. You know, and you know, emotional catharsis doesn't necessarily relieve one of the habit. I mean, everyone that has a catharsis with Byron Katie becomes exactly the way they were when they leave the hall. I guarantee it. Because that's not the playing field. The real playing field is, oh, just this, just here, just now. And this and here and now don't really mean anything, you know. It's not an object. As I am, whatever that suggests, as experience is portraying itself as me, in me, to me, or in me and it, blah, blah, blah. Is this what I'd hoped for? or can I find another dozen reasons why present experience is just not what I had in mind? I mean, and what's meditation practice? You know, getting honest with that fact? Yeah. Wow. Experience is just not what I had in mind. Or looking for, you know, exotic sensuality, radiant insight, holographic, you know, events, which are fun. I mean, there's no question everything is a load of fun. You don't have to do the, you know, the ona pona howie howie thing. I'm sorry, please forgive me, you know, I won't do it again, I love you, right? You don't have to, you know, make any kind of apology for anything.
That keeps you in the game, and it's funny because that's what, it's like you see that you're like, I'm such an idiot, and then you just want to apologize profusely for it, and then you know, feel bad about it.
I mean, whatever. You know, the most authentic human you could find is someone that just keeps apologizing. Even though that can be irritating too.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah. And if I hang out with a Peter Brown or a Paul Hederman or whoever it is, you know, and they tell me wonderful stories of, you know, spiritual glory, then I'm naturally going to gravitate, you know, toward that as an expectation, as a barometer, as a destination, so that my experience can be better someday.
Put up your little radiant flag. A glorious flag.
And that habit of ours to idealize something else, somewhere else, someone else, someplace else, keeps us from having an intimate quality, spending quality time with exactly how this feels right now.
Right, so the only thing that's keeping this moment from feeling like it's enough is that urge to make it something different.
Perhaps, but even look at that urge, and where does that urge come from?
Well, the urge is just part of the, you know, of everything else, just another thing that shows up.
I guess. I don't know. And I don't know if this can be answered in a, you know, a psychiatric way or in an emotional way or, you know, in a chronological way. Because it really is, you know, purely textural, right? It's resonant. It's resonant. It's, you know, present experience is vibratory. It's resonant. So it's difficult to say if I am feeling or interpreting present experience as being insufficient somehow, why that occurs. Who knows? Maybe it's a, you know, a curiously conditioned way of being. Maybe we just imprinted this chronic dissatisfaction, chronic restlessness, by, you know, mirroring everyone that raised us, everyone we went to school with, our teachers, our professors, our bosses, everyone on TV. It's like in order to play the human game, we had to figure out how to participate in this, you know, curious display of how, just how unhappy everybody is.
That would indicate that there's a way to get out of it.
Well, maybe not. Maybe it's not anything at all, and so is nothing to get out of.
But also, like, if it's inherent, like, if you think of a duck imprinting, a baby duck's imprint on mama ducks.
Yeah.
And they get out of that, it doesn't really make sense to say. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what ducks do.
And so right, do we.
But me saying that you can get out of it is, I mean, is a...
See, there's...
It's, like this saying, is, it's just like saying... you know, if you were to say evolution brought me to this, then evolution can also look at itself and change accordingly. For instance,
sure.
If
it's beneficial, ducks can stop imprinting, I'm sure.
So,
well, before one moves into, you know, a useful, let's say, elaboration. The catharsis is present experience without explanation. Then what is my honest fundamental relationship with present experience? That's more of a harmonic is I'm not bewildering myself with, you know, the whys and the wherefores or the chronology or the causality.
Right. It's just, to me, this is the feeling right now. This is the feeling of present experience.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Right.
Even if full stop is after, what shall I do about it? Full stop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That feeling, the thought, full stop.
Yes.
So, yeah. I, it's like an acceptance of this is it. This is it. That's it. Don't ask why or how, whatever. This is it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And that feels okay to me.
Uh huh. Sure.
That's it. It's yeah. No more.
Yeah. Right.
Even if I'm feeling like shit.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no more.
If I'm feeling desperate.
Yes.
Nothing.
Yes.
Full stop.
Or elated even.
This is how it's expressing itself. Like
yeah.
This.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I can't, if there is such a thing as liberation, I would imagine that's it.
Who's to say?
Yeah, more bullshit.
By, you know, let's say just looking at the strategies of the glorification of experience or the strategies for, you know, the disappointment that we find in experience, we can see how all of those strategies, you know, will create the imagination of time, of some kind of causal factors, of how things could and should be better or different for me if I apply myself in XYZ way. And that distractibility is how consciousness deludes itself. Of how consciousness does what it does best, which is to behave avoidantly. And we can't help it if I've read spiritual books, you know, Autobiography of a Yogi, you know, Eckhart Tolle, on and on and on, then I'm already full of all kinds of ideas and aspirations and, you know, metaphors and implications of, boy, wouldn't it be good to sit on a bench and throw a plate of spaghetti against the wall and then become rich by, you know, writing The Power of Now. So it's like, what does it feel like to be rid, curiously rid of distraction?
But I was talking about when you had mentioned it's kind of programmed into us.
Yeah.
I think it seems that same programming can go to a point where it sees the programming and sees that it doesn't work anymore. In other words, it sees that, you know, when I get the money, when I get the enlightenment, when I get this job, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You look and you realize it never happens. It never does it, what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, yeah.
You totally know that. Then you start just going, this is it.
Yeah.
That's just fucking what's throwing me off.
Uh-huh.
Thinking it's going to get better.
Yeah.
And then it seems like it becomes more acceptable or more like this is it.
It has that, but as we hang out with the, you know, vibratory signature of present experience, now that the reflex of distraction is gotten softer.
Yeah.
It doesn't just end with this is it. It's a portal.
Well, yeah, because this moment of what is, instead of all the concepts and urges and whatever, just becomes, like you said, a textual experience, and that textual without doesn't mean anything anymore. It just becomes this pool of sparkles and light shows, and that seems like your radiance, your whole experience becomes that. Even when you get stuck in those, oh my God, I can't believe Trump's president. Like Peter would say, it's kind of like this small little thing happening in the corner, but this, you know, obviously for, I'm sure all of us, like we said, the textual experience becomes more full and vibratory, as you would say, you know, it's.
Well, you know, perfect, let's say perfect innocence, perfect undistractability.
Like a baby?
Okay. Yeah, or like us.
Let's stick with babies and Jesus.
Baby Jesus?
Oh yeah, combine it. Baby Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, what's the quality of mind that is not, you know, being pushed around by the imagination of fulfillingness?
Definitely seems to be less obsessive.
Oh, yeah.
Is that shit's obsessive?
Sure.
Like horrid obsessive compulsive disorder.
Which is what we've all got. That's where we'll be extinct in 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're just, you know, we're just trying to eke out a few moments of lucid peace of mind before the species goes out of business. Enlightenment, I think, is maybe too high a goal.
Well, you can have enlightenment right now if you stop asking for it or wanting it.
Perhaps, yeah, perhaps that's right. Perhaps this is exactly what it already is and has always been, whatever those mean. And it's the quality of our, let's say, relationship or appreciation.
This reminds me of when you just, that last line. I have a friend that I used to play music with when I was young. And a few years back, I got to for dinner. I went for dinner with him, and they told me he was playing in a band in a church. And I said, "Oh, we got to go check this out because they're great musicians." We went and checked out the church, and I forget if it was Baptist or what it was, but when the guy gave the sermon, he said, "It doesn't matter if you're, you know, good or bad or whatever, it all depends on your relationship with God." And I so wanted to say to him, what does that mean? Like, explain that to me.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Because, like what you were just saying is the same thing. It's like, your relationship with the present moment is, that's it, right? I mean, that really defies whether you're going to be fulfilled or not. That's it.
That's right. That's right.
A relationship with the present moment is going to determine your fulfillment.
Well, you know? It is that. Yeah, it's not deterministic. It is that.
Very simple.
Yeah.
Too simple.
Yeah, it's way too simple.
Yeah, you'll never make any money selling that. You're going to have to push on. You're going to have at least a 10-step.
Something. You need something if you want to sell.
Realize that, yeah.
Yeah. So this is the nature of a, you know, relatively simple, no bells and whistles, no bright lights, you know, transmutation or catharsis in consciousness. Is that, oh yeah, present experience? Oh, I don't really know what present experience is because I've been so busy my entire life avoiding it that I wouldn't even know the first way to sit down and turn around and, you know, even experience my experience. I don't know how to do that because all I've got are avoidance strategies.
And it doesn't, even in my experience, when right. you become, you know, like, okay, this is it, and kind of fulfilled in that way, it doesn't mean it's not going to be very uncomfortable.
Yeah, it doesn't guarantee anything.
I've always been a real anxious person, and that anxiety, a lot seems like it's different now, but uh-huh. that anxiety just comes and goes. And it's like, you know, I really thought that would go.
Yeah.
Cause like what you were saying about, Christine, about the, being obsessed. What were you saying? Neurotic or about things like some of that stuff is finally gone. Like I just don't get nervous about things I used to get nervous about, but
you don't check your oven like 5 times to make sure it's off anymore.
I never had that kind of compulsion. It's more like for work and stuff, like,
you know, make sure you have all your picks 10 times.
Yeah, you know, am I going to show up in time and is it going to be okay, and those kind of fears have just been like, now it's kind of like
little list of all the things you need.
You know, I can feel that it doesn't matter anymore. But anxiety, whatever that means, like energies that are coming in and out of my body that make me want to fucking, you know, like I have to sleep or yes. I have, you know, just energies, just
right
crazy shit. That shit keeps on going, man. And sometimes feels more intense than ever, you know?
Sure. Yeah. You know, sometimes attractive, inspiring, enlightened personalities do more to distract us than to engender an ordinary, not so special, no big deal relationship with present experience. Mm-hmm. And truly nothing, you know, nothing to defend and nothing to become. No avoidant banter. Creation of time, space, place, justification, causality, concept, etc. This is the way presence feels right now. And I can't even characterize particularly how it feels. I mean, if there's a strong wave of emotion, you know, you can say, yeah, I'm angry. Yeah, I'm hurt. Yeah, I'm this. Yeah, I'm that. But even that is going through, a profound cathartic shift from moment to moment. So you can't really nail yourself down as to being any one way or any one thing.
Yeah.
And as you know, the avoidant tomfoolery of consciousness rests a little bit. And we have this, you know, well, I don't know. But whatever, this authenticity. Present experience is sovereign. Present experience happens to be whatever awake is. The recalibration from distractibility to, it's just Kevin, Suzanne. One's present experience or capacity for this to be absolutely ordinary without triggering avoidant strategies is exactly this and is a portal to whatever those enlightened fuckers are talking about.
I think that's maybe why, I mean, we talked, a lot of people, we talk about, you know, meditation. You had brought it up earlier, and I think that's why meditation seems like it's maybe so included in a lot of religions and stuff, because that's the one thing you're doing is you're sitting down and saying, this is, you're going to sit and the distractions are going to be limited now, and you got to sit with this even if it feels like shit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So you're sitting, because that's what you're going to be doing.
When you die.
Yeah, sitting with whatever's coming up.
There's something that's, you know, marvelous and enthralling about seeking for refinement of consciousness or, you know, exquisite revelation, shit like that. You know, what fun. There's also something to be said about the absolute ordinariness. And spending quality time with this just as it is. And even that, you know, ongoing insatiability that we have to derive something out of present experience is another aspect of that, you know, restlessness and avoidance. The aggressive way that we are trying to derive something from present experience in order to create more satisfaction. No grasping, no deriving, not placing ourselves imaginarily in some other circumstance. We're not looking to emulate the, you know, spiritual experience of somebody else, which is a lot of freedom if I'm not looking to emulate the spiritual experience of somebody else.
Or any kind of experience of anyone. I mean, any yes. Ideological.
Yes. Yes.
That's what any experience of someone else would have to
that's
be
right.
For you. Some yeah. Ideological.
Yes.
Perspective or whatever.
Uh huh. We don't trust ourselves. We don't trust experience. We don't trust whoever it is we think is responsible for experience. We end up in a codependent, supplicating relationship with consciousness, and we suffer ongoing distraction.
All we're doing is like questioning and arguing with it. I'm saying,
yeah.
My experience.
Yeah.
It's yeah. Like, yeah, I don't trust you. What are you doing? This yes. Doesn't seem right. I've calculated this shit, and this is not going to work out.
Yeah. I'm telling you this isn't right. Is anyone listening to me? Yeah. You're like... You see,
and it constantly like shows you that it's fine, you know, and you're still like, all right, this time, but I don't know. And then we're good yeah. For a little bit, but.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. What if present experience, whatever it is or isn't, and no one knows what it is or isn't, is absolutely sovereign, is truly all there is. And those clever habits of insatiability, distractibility, avoidant strategies, space, time, self, just I gotta go pee. I would say this is the fun, really the fun, profound aspect of presence itself, that without the slightest hint of craving, we can actually discover a relationship with ourselves as presence that is non-avoidant and non-distracting. That's intelligence. That's, you could say, dignity. And you could say as a consequence of innocence, then the, you know, you could say the expressive majesty of experiencing, of perception, of creation, of emptiness itself are, you could say they come more clearly into view. Nobody has any advantage. Nobody has any knowledge. There's nothing better than here.